George Washington's favorite Bible verse was Micah 4, verse 4, which talks about how every man shall be able to rest under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. To the father of our country, this verse from the Old Testament was a picture of what America can offer to the world, including to its Jewish population, at least what the America could offer to its citizens. Washington himself wrote a letter to three separate synagogues in America saying how pleased he was that in this fledgling new nation, Jews would be free from harassment, the type from which they fled from in the old world. Fast forward to today, and we've seen incredible examples of anti-Semitism in modern America, including on the campuses of some of our most prestigious schools. Rabbi Daniel Lappin is the president of the American Alliance of Jews and Christians. He's been a guest on this program many times. He now joins us to discuss anti-Semitism in modern America and the rising tide of it. Very interesting to have him back on. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Points. Rabbi Lappin, welcome back.
Hello, Jerry. Very good to be with you. How are things with you?
Things are fine. And since you and I first programmed this discussion, things have gotten a little more quiet, perhaps, on some of the college campuses on the one hand. And on the other hand, I see, you know, there's different signs of Hamas protests even here in America in opposition to the Jews.
Right. Well, first of all, just a really interesting little tidbit from ancient Jewish wisdom on George Washington's favorite verse from Micah, which you quoted at the beginning of our conversation. And that is that the original Hebrew stresses emphatically that it's not sitting under a vine or under a fig tree in the indefinite article. It's possessive. It's under his. And so Micah's very much talking about a society that values private property. And that idyllic circumstance of peace and tranquility that the prophet describes depends upon each person sitting under his own fig tree, not the village fig tree, under his own vine, not a village vine, not a communal vine, not a vine that belongs to everybody, but his. And so that's really important because it's impossible to mistake the fact that exactly the same people who have suddenly found that they are long-lost brothers of Hamas terrorists and that they have to, and, you know, these are privileged students at elite college campuses. These are minority people from America's inner cities. A strange collection of people have suddenly decided, hey, we're with Hamas. And I think it's important to realize that what they are actually opposed to is not just Israel and not just America, but what they're opposed to is the entire social system depicted by the Bible, including private ownership. And that's one of the reasons that they make no secret of their loathing of the so-called capitalist system. I prefer calling it the free market system, but it's you learn a lot by seeing the gathering that your enemy's hatred collects around them.
Does Israel have the right to exist? It seems that some of these, you know, Hamas, pro-Hamas protesters are basically saying no. In fact, even that phrase, from the river to the sea, which was quoted at one of our campuses. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it was quoted at George Washington University. What does that phrase mean? And, you know, how is that so troubling to, again, this conflict of vision for what America is supposed to be?
Yeah. Well, Jerry, when you say that does Israel have a right to exist, you naturally expect that my response will going to be, yes, of course it does. But I would like to be a little bit more specific. Let me tell you a 30-second story A few years ago, I sailed my family in our sailboat across the Pacific Ocean. And I was very overtired one night mid-ocean. And I had a habit every 24 hours, I checked our water tank to make sure we got plenty of fresh water. And it was due to my tiredness, but I didn't know it at the time. I checked and I thought we were out of water. And I racing through my mind is they were, you know, another 10 days or so away from Hawaii. We don't have enough water for 10 days for a bunch of little kids and everybody. What am I going to do? And I remember I was so exhausted and overtired that I sort of had a bout of semi-hysterical laughter, thinking to myself, well, I got no problems, right? Because we are guaranteed a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So as long as I got a right to life, I got nothing to worry about. And, you know, the ludicrousness of it was that it's all very well to have a right, but if it doesn't come with a phone number of somebody who has the obligation to provide it, that right is meaningless. And so when people say, well, we all have a right to a job, okay, whose responsibility is it to provide that job for you and for you and for him and for the other person? A right is meaningless. You see where I'm going here. Does Israel have a right to exist? And if so, who exactly in whose line? In other words, for a right to exist, there must be some authority who says, I personally guarantee it. And I don't believe that America under Biden is that provider of Israel's right to exist. I don't think it's the International Court at The Hague. It's certainly not the United Nations. So in the final analysis, a right to exist, I don't see means anything. In the bottom line is, does Israel have the ability to hold off its enemies and to defeat them when invaded and when attacked in order to secure their existence? But I don't think the phrase right to life is very useful.
Okay, fair enough. And then what is your comment about all the pro-Hamas protesters we're seeing here on college campuses and other places in America?
America has demonstrated, we can see through clear demonstration that we are in a very deteriorated condition. Never mind being a far cry from George Washington's America, we're actually a far cry from Dwight Eisenhower's America. And one of the indicators of a declining society, this was true for Rome, and it was true for the British Empire in the early 1900s, and it's true for us. And that is when a government is more diligent about policing the law abiding than the law breaking, you must know that the writing is on the wall, to think of the prophet Daniel. And right now, the people who are being prosecuted and persecuted are people who demonstrated on January the 6th in favor of Donald Trump. What they did do or what they didn't do, I don't know. But one thing is for sure, they didn't ever do as much as the rioters and the looters did in the night, in the summer of 2020. And yet those people were given a pass not only on the crimes they committed of property destruction, they were also given a pass on violating gatherings during COVID. My point is that it's a little bit late to worry about Hamas demonstrators because for years already, our law enforcement has ignored demonstrations and protests that violate the law. In other words, closing off a freeway is not allowed. That doesn't mean your rights for free expression are being violated. It's your rights for free expression can't be expressed at the cost of the public's access to a freeway. We've given up on that one. And so, yes, that's a huge problem. There's another problem, and that is that in 1965, we passed an Immigration Reform Act. And at the time, Senator Irvin Sam Irvin spoke to had a hearing, and he was talking to Secretary of State Dean Rusk, and he said, "Look, I don't like this change to the immigration law because it discriminates against people from England and Western Europe, who are the people who built this country." And he, of course, he was overruled, and the 1965 Immigration Reform Act passed. One of its results was a huge, incalculably large increase in the number of Muslim immigrants. And, you know, you can't start solving a problem when it manifests itself. You've got to have a little bit of wisdom to be able to see the approaching footsteps. Even if the sound of them is soft and gentle, you kind of got to hear. So right now we've got a few million people in the population who think nothing of shutting off access to Manhattan and blocking roads and blocking the airport, all because they oppose Israel defending itself against Hamas. This is the situation we're at, Jerry. I think the start of a solution is acknowledging the problem, and I'm not sure we've done that yet.
Do you think that in some ways just the severity and barbarity of October 7th was a wake-up call to some in the West?
I wonder. I think people were shocked by that. But let's imagine that they hadn't raped and they hadn't mutilated and they hadn't killed little babies and they didn't maliciously execute children in front of parents and parents. Let's say they did none of that. And all they did was line everybody up and shoot them nicely, neatly, and cleanly. I don't think that I would have been any less indignant, even though because the media and so much of the population is driven by emotion rather than by intellect, by heart rather than head, I dare say you're right. I dare say there probably was more notice given to it because of the level of the atrocities. But an invasion remains an invasion, regardless of what they do.
I think one of the problems in terms of response here in America, one of the problems is so many, especially some of these people on campuses and so forth, they've been so brainwashed by Marxism that they think in terms of, well, there's the oppressors and the oppressed. Everybody, you know, it's one or the other. And in this case, the, you know, Hamas are the oppressed and the, you know, Israelites are the oppressor, even if that oppressor is just a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And but it goes a lot further than that as well, if I might say so, Jerry. And that is that this is a war against Western civilization. In that sense, it's a war against the Bible because Western civilization is the civilization that the Bible created. And we've spoken about this in the past, and it's beyond all doubt and beyond all question. And this is why one of the very worst sins you can commit is colonization. That's like this ultimate bad word. But the fact remains that those parts of Africa that were colonized by Western powers are to this day still doing better than those places that were not. In other words, the reality is, as unpopular as it is for me to say this, the reality is that European colonization of Africa was a good thing, not a bad thing. And it's what built railways, it's what built hospitals, it's what built postal services. And to whatever extent, these things still continue to
and
exist.
Schools.
In, say again?
And schools.
And schools, yes. And, yes, absolutely. And so they portray Israel as a colonizer in a Middle East that belongs to people with brown skins.
And just so you know, we have 40 seconds left. Go ahead.
Well, no, that's about it. I mean, it's no great solutions in 40 seconds or even 40 minutes, but at least the start of reality, the start of solutions is perceiving the full dimension of the problem. And I think that's perhaps the small contribution I've tried to make in the minutes we've had.
Sure. Rabbi Daniel Lappin, let me go ahead and give your website. It is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and Lappin is spelled Lapin.com. Thank you so much for all your insights. Appreciate you. All the best.
Good talking with you, Jerry. Best wishes.
You bye too. Bye-bye now.